Thanks to Rollbar for sponsoring today's episode of Does Not Compute. Rollbar makes it easy to detect, diagnose, and fix production errors. Every major language and framework can be integrated with Rollbar in just minutes, so you can start tracking production errors right away. Instead of sifting through logs to diagnose problems, Rollbar provides detailed context, including stack traces, request parameters, affected users, and more. Since Rollbar can alert you when something new goes wrong, it's easy to fix bugs before they infect your entire user base. Rollbar also plays nice with the other tools you use and love. You can easily send error alerts to Slack or HipChat, or turn them into issues in Jira, Pivotal Tracker, Trello, and others. Even better, Rollbar hooks into your source code stored in GitHub, Bitbucket, or GitLab, making it simple to associate errors with code. You can head to rollbar.com/DNC to learn more and sign up. When you sign up using that link, Rollbar will give you a one-month free trial of their Bootstrap plan. Thanks again to Rollbar for sponsoring the show, and remember to check out rollbar.com/DNC today. So I've finally done it, Sean. I've finally made the jump. Nestnotes is now, not fully, but mostly, running as a single code base across web and native, which is pretty ridiculous, to me at least.
Yeah, so a single code base for the client, like you said, for web and native and not server and all server and client stuff.
Right, yeah. Of course, the API is still just the API. But the Nuxt platform is now set up in a way that it can run. It can be compiled for both. I still have to do Android. At some point in the future, it's just like too much, basically. I don't think I would be able to fully test iOS, Android, and web before launch. You know what I mean? So we're focusing on iOS first, but the Android part should be relatively easy to add in.
So how are you going about doing that?
It is a bit of a ballet, but so at its core, this is just a very simple Cordova app. It's just a wrapper for an iframe, basically. If you're online and the app detects that everything is okay, then it will switch to displaying an iframe that just loads a specialized version of the web app. At, you know, its own URL. So it's not just the one at nestnotes.com. It actually is compiled differently, being told that it's going to be loaded in the iOS native app. And that is used within the code base to actually toggle features on and off or display different content. So, for example, a standard homepage that you would have for an app is generally going to be very, very different than what you would display on your first run when someone downloads the app and launches it on their phone, right? Because, you know, at that point, if somebody has already taken the effort to download your app, they're probably sold. So you just need to give them a way to either sign in or sign up most of the time. It's less marketing. Sure. So for things like that or for feature detection, that sort of thing, there's just a flag passed in so I can detect if I'm running on a mobile device and if so, which mobile device that is.
That's pretty nice. So it's almost like you're just kind of Dockerizing it. You have a little container, you toss the same. Well, it's compiled differently with different environment variables, I assume, like you said. But you just kind of toss it into its own container and it does the thing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so then what the native wrapper is actually doing, like I said, it handles things like detecting online, offline state. Also, a weird thing that I have to do is it detects when the status bar is tapped, so I can tell the web app to scroll to the top. But the actual technology there is just going to be like a post message API, so I can pass data back and forth between the native app, native code base, between the Cordova wrapper web, UI web view, or whatever they're called now, and the system itself and the remote version of the web client, if that all makes sense. There's quite a bit going on. It's a bit of a web.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny because I remember the first time I did a Cordova app, I had to do small things like that too. Things that people, like in testing, people would be like, hey, when I tap on the status bar, why doesn't it scroll to the top? And then I would just have to like use iOS to actually find features that I didn't really know about and features that other people use, and I had to re-implement them myself.
Yeah, kind of the nice thing here, though, is that it seems like, I think when you were last using Cordova, this was a few years ago, I also hadn't used Cordova in quite a while, probably even longer than since the last time you had, I think. And I'm really impressed with how that ecosystem has grown. It seems to be a lot more mature than last I looked at it.
That's good to hear, because it seemed like every time I would try to do something, there was some sort of bug that I ran into, especially with third-party plugins. That was a whole nightmare, because there were just different versions of the plugins. Certain versions weren't managed, and there wasn't really much documentation about it. Typically, it was just a repo with a bunch of code in there and didn't really explain what it was doing beyond on the surface level. So yeah, it was pretty tough to reason about. So you settled on using Cordova, like a thin Cordova wrapper for this. Did you check out any other technologies like Weex or anything like that?
I did a little bit. At the end of the day, it just wasn't going to be realistic to do anything else. I would have loved to do something. Obviously, I really like a well-built native app. And ideally, this would be done in Swift, and there would be a Java version for Android. And I would absolutely love to do that. And I would also love to check out Weex, even though, well, let's talk about Weex in a second. But I would love to approach this with native technologies, truly native, and build out its own app, following all the conventions of the given operating system and all that kind of stuff. But it was just a question of time. Basically, I had the one option where it was like, I can wrap this existing Nuxt app in something that can be shipped on mobile devices as a native app, or we're going to need to figure something else out, like how we can bring on a team to do something else, because otherwise it's just going to be, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of hours, right?
Right. I think the end goal for something like Weex is a little bit different too, because essentially what you're needing is people just to be able to use it. That's kind of like the MVP for the mobile app is, can people use this on the mobile phone? And you can now say yes, they can install it. That kind of checks all the boxes. But when you pull in another system like Weex or React Native, or especially even down to the native level with Swift and Android, like you said, it does pretty much require a whole different team, because it's a whole set of different concerns that are happening at that point.
Yeah, there's just no way that I would be able to do, there's no way that I would be able to build out the API, build out the web app, and like, manage teams, I guess, that are working on these other things. Plus, that's just going to be a huge cost as well. Yeah. But I did look a fair bit at Weex, and there's another one, Quasar or something like that. I think I looked at both of those, and I just looked around at some of the other technologies available, and it really felt like if I tried to go with any of those things, I would basically just be building out an entirely separate Vue app anyhow. Right. Is kind of what it seemed like it was going to snowball into.
Yeah. Then at that point, you're inheriting a whole other build tool, a whole other build chain, a whole other build system and all that. I mean, yeah, you have Cordova, but you're not really, you have a thin wrapper. So it's not like you're implementing a bunch of features on top of Cordova. You're just implementing one feature and that it loads your website.
Well, I will have to add more features. Like as we do stuff with push notifications and other native-y things where you need that. Like I said, I'm going to need to build out that post message API inside the web app itself to communicate with the native wrapper.
Yeah, that and offline mode stuff too, I assume.
Yeah, offline mode stuff has been pretty simple. There's just a connection. It's like navigator.connection or something like that you can get in Cordova, and you can just subscribe to online and offline events.
Nice.
It's very simple. So the actual, it's kind of interesting that the Cordova app is actually another Webpack app that is just a like the simplest Vue app I've ever made. And all it does is monitor those events, and it'll be able to pass that information back and forth. And it's in charge of determining when to show the iframe or when to show different content that is specific to the native app, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, I'm pretty impressed that you're able to do that so quickly. And it kind of, like I said, it kind of checks all your boxes. You need people to be able to install it on their phone and use it. And that hits all those boxes. And so you're able to basically keep everything in one code base. So you're not inheriting a whole new tool chain, a whole new kind of workflow and deploy chain and all that stuff. You're just kind of tacking something else onto it, which is a pretty big thing, you know, especially mobile traffic keeps growing and growing and growing. So it's pretty cool that you were able to efficiently find something that met those initial needs like that.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, hopefully at least, I guess this remains to be seen, but I definitely feel like we're at the point where you can actually deliver a really good experience across all of these platforms with a single code base. I guess the web has matured to a point, and especially with stuff like Vue making these really complex, relatively speaking, complex applications on web so easy to build out. And now it's just something you can ship that over, and it is probably going to feel pretty okay if you made sure it feels okay on the web.
Yeah, I guess it all just comes down to fundamentals, right? You know, not breaking the fundamental rules of how the web works, and it should work pretty okay because obviously the vendors themselves, the browser vendors and the device vendors are going to make sure that most of the time they're making sure that they're following the best practices and the standards and stuff like that. So if you yourself are following the standards, it's going to be pretty okay across the board.
Right. And I think one of the big complaints over the years about hybrid apps, as some people call them, basically Cordova style apps, has been that they don't really feel very good. And that is a valid criticism, but I'm not sure that that's specific to Cordova. I think that could be said of many single page web apps in general, is that they just don't feel very good, whether they're running in a browser or otherwise. A lot of them don't feel good. And so if you take something that doesn't feel good on the web and then you shove it into a phone, then it's not going to feel any better.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the time, people, when they say it doesn't feel good, they're talking about specifically like little UI animations. And specifically, like when I'm using a website on my phone, it doesn't have momentum scrolling or WebKit overflow scrolling. It just feels janky almost. And it's funny how much of that plays into my opinion on how well something was done, right? Something as silly as, does this thing bounce back when I scroll? But that's important. People get used to that sort of thing. They get used to that being like the standard experience for how they're using their apps. And they don't know any different that if they're installing an application from the App Store, like they install Nest Notes, they don't know that it's not actually a native app and that it's just an iframe, right? So I guess there's a lot to be said about, you know, doing some work to try to achieve that. But I think on a greater level, most users as a whole, they just want your application to work.
Yeah, if you give people something that they can understand how to use and then it does the thing that they expect it to do regularly, that's already better than what most people are used to in terms of tech products, right?
Yeah, I hear all the time people will say stuff like, why doesn't this work or why isn't this working? And I haven't heard any normal users or, you know, regular people, like, you know, being around my girlfriend or being around my coworkers or being around people in general public, I've never heard anyone say like, oh, that was a cool effect, or, oh, that's kind of cool how this moves when they scroll. In fact, I've heard more people say like, well, I really wish that didn't move when it scrolled. And I really wish this like animation wasn't happening. They'd rather like the baseline experience be functional as opposed to having, you know, all the bells and whistles.
Yeah. And I think this is something that is sort of, oh man, people are going to tweet about this probably. This is something where you saw a lot of that kind of over ornamentation pre iOS 7. It was getting pretty bad. And I feel like we have actually stepped away from that in a lot of ways, especially in UI design. You look at stuff now and it tends to focus a lot more on like, here are the available actions and here is your content, instead of like, here's our pretty fake leather.
Right. The skeuomorphic design phase.
So much fake leather.
I remember watching the unveiling of iOS 7 and it got hated on so much, but you're right. I think it kind of pushes people more into thinking about the data than the fake leather, you know, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, this is an old conversation, yeah. I guess, but it does seem to be something that a lot of times I feel like you do still see that sort of over ornamentation creeping through in things like you're talking about. People are saying, "Well, I don't really care about all these animations. It's like the site doesn't load very right. well," and it's sort of like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So you have food and shelter, and then eventually it's like emotional acceptance or whatever way up at the tippy top.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, yeah, the sugar and the sweet things taste good, but it shouldn't be the foundation of what you're putting in your body or what you're, you know, if you're taking that metaphor to a web app, it shouldn't be the foundation of your web app or your UI or whatever. It should always be the boring things that I think should get the most attention. The things that we're all like, oh, I have to design this again, or I have to think about doing this again. It's like, well, yeah, because the reason why you've done it so many times before is because it's a foundational thing, and it deserves time spent in thinking about it and iterating on it. And so often people, you know, me included, we get so kind of bored about doing those rudimentary things that we want to try to skip ahead and do some things that we think are cool or challenging or different. And a lot of times that comes out in like animations or UI animations and kind of like the sprinkles on top. And we kind of skip over altogether the base foundation.
Yeah. And I mean, none of this is to say that you shouldn't do animations in your app. Right. I want to make sure that people don't think that that's what we're saying, or at least that's what I'm saying, because that's not my goal there. I love doing animations and stuff. I love adding in those little touches and those little flourishes. Like on Nesnos, when you're checking out, the pages slide back and forth and do all sorts of stuff. But that took like five minutes, right? I mean, Vue's animation system, first of all, goodness gracious, top-notch stuff. Wow. So impressive. But making sure that you have that sort of soul in there is really important. You just can't lose sight of the actual like base functionality, which I think sometimes does happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, the substance needs to be there, right? So the base meal, so to speak, like the food has to be there, but the food's not going to taste great without salt. You know, salt takes 2 seconds to add, and adding the right amount of salt will make something taste delicious. Not having any salt, it's going to be tasting bland. And if you add too much salt, people aren't going to want to eat it, you know? And I think that's a really good comparison to what happens in the web a lot. So there are certain applications that haven't had any salt added and they're just kind of bland. And then there's a ton of applications or a ton of websites that have had way too much salt added. And people, you know, they're like, oh, this looks delicious. And they start using it and they're like, wow, this is super salty. And that's kind of where I hear people saying like, I wish this wouldn't happen, or I don't understand why. Like I click on this thing and then like the page completely changes itself around. I think we're calling out animations because it's such an easy thing to point and look at because it's like in your face, you know? But I think there's a lot of other things that are happening, a lot of like trendy UI things that we kind of spring for because they look nice or they feel nice, but they're not necessarily usable. And one place I'm finding that to be the case, especially on like the user-facing side, is like the multi-select dropdowns and dropdowns where you're like filter, like searching and filtering inside of them. It doesn't seem to me like a lot of people know how to use those. But for me, I tend to use them all the time because I understand how they work. And as a programmer, they make things that I do a lot easier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think maybe a good example of the like thinking, oh, this looks good without thinking about whether or not it's actually usable is the gray text.
Yeah.
And people have talked about this before, but gray text is everywhere now. Like nobody ever uses anything even close to black. It's just like light gray text all over the place. And that's really, that can be very difficult to read. And that applies to other UI elements as well. Like YouTube did a pretty big redesign, I guess a few months ago now, something like that. And overall, fantastic, really great stuff. It's easier to find things now generally. But they went with this trend of having these super, super light gray icons. And this is for things like when you like or dislike a video. And when you click on that, it's actually a really subtle change. A lot of times I can't tell whether or not I've actually liked a video. And that, to me, is such a basic thing. Like, that's a thing that a lot of people do. People like videos all the time. And it's an important action on the site. And it's important to know whether or not you've done that, right? But in the name of like, oh, let's have these icons be subtle so they're not too distracting, or whatever the rationale was there, it doesn't really matter. They've actually made it harder to use instead of just making something pretty.
Yeah, I'm doing it right now. I'm using it, and the hover colors are almost indistinguishable to me from sitting at, you know, my distance without leaning in. And if I click on liking a video, it turns blue, but if I refresh, the state's not there. I can't tell if I've liked it or not.
So mine doesn't even turn blue. Mine is gray. Interesting. When I like them. We've been AB.
yeah. But that is one thing I saw people tweeting about. Like, oh, YouTube is supposed to be super fancy now, but it just doesn't work. Like some people have been having some problems with it. I luckily haven't had any problems with it, but it's interesting, right? But I guess all that to say, like, we keep like harping on the programming side of things, you know, focusing on fundamentals, focusing on the foundational things in programming and get those down and then move on. And it's the same, and, you know, the same idea can be applied to building the things that you're building. You know, focus on the foundational fundamental things, before adding in lots of seasoning. You know, make sure that the base consistency is right before you start tossing in all the extra stuff.
Today's episode of Does Not Compute was brought to you by Rollbar. Rollbar makes it fast and easy to find and fix production errors. You can hook any major language up to Rollbar and be tracking production errors today. Learn more by visiting rollbar.com/DNC. When you sign up at that link, Rollbar will give you 1 month free of their Bootstrap plan.